Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hello.
There we go.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. We are going to make sense of this day, which is vaguely the tagline we're supposed to use. It just kind of escaped me. I forgot what it's supposed to be, but that's okay.
You know, it's pretty close. Yeah. I think we've all agreed it is Spaghetti Brain Week, and it is now, I'm Molly Wood, it is now Hollowed Out Shell Thursday in Spaghetti Brain Week. There is, as of this recording, still no official word on the outcome of the presidential race. I believe the president may speak at this moment while we're recording
it. Set to be speaking. I've got CNN up in a browser on my laptop, and they are waiting for the word from the White House.
So, you know, if you get an update to this podcast, you'll know it was momentous, but likely not. Anyway, voters have been out demonstrating, calling simultaneously for every vote to be counted and also for vote counting to be stopped. The Trump campaign filed some lawsuits to stop the count. That's like the basic. That's what we know at this moment.
Yeah.
At this moment.
States are narrowing. So, John King is doing the map, you know, all that good stuff.
How is John King still standing? Like, he must have. Like, his feet at this point must just be like blocks, like just blocks of like swollen agony.
Yeah. Oh, God. I ought to give a little map love here to Steve Kornacki at MSNBC. He apparently has been doing the same thing, but not in a suit.
Oh, really?
Rolled up shirt sleeves. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yes. Yeah. Somebody recently referred to their boyfriend, Steve K. and that's who they were talking about. So now I get it. That's funny.
Anyway, so this will be a Thursday.
A little bit of news.
We're going to do a thing. Yep. How are you feeling hollowed out shell-wise? I don't feel so bad.
I just feel weird and jangly. Like, I don't think I feel hollowed out exactly. I just feel tense. Like, there's a weird pain in my chest that may or may not be a heart attack. No, I'm just a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Jangly.
So, news. Why don't you go first? Go.
I found on Twitter this fascinating piece in Time magazine about the... I'm going to apologize now because I'm going to slightly buzzkill a thing that we've been talking about as a good thing, which is our record voter turnout in 2020.
Yeah.
And there's actually a great piece in Time that went up today. Yeah. That said, it's a history of turnout and how voter turnout actually, the suppression thereof was, as we know, pretty deliberate. Right. Like that occurred on purpose, and it occurred by elites in the late 19th and early 20th century who were like, oh, there was this huge culture of voter turnout in the late 19th century. I'm quoting from this piece. And it was mostly working class Americans, immigrants and urban Americans. And so the upper class is sort of like, oh, we don't love this. And they start adopting these procedures to make things more difficult. That said, though, the last time this proportion of Americans voted, it also, the thing driving that turnout was partisan rage, not this kind of, you know, delight in the civic duty, but in fact, a prelude to the anger and tribalism that ultimately led to the Civil War. After the Civil War, voting just turned into a really fun party and a lot of people did it. But what led to the turnout that lasted until the voter suppression efforts started was, I hate the other side so much, I got to get out there and vote.
Does one need to actually explain the parallels? No, one does not. I feel obliged here to say what I always say when history comes up and smacks you in the face. History is still cool, even if it smacks you in the face. But wow, that's a good piece to read. That's a good piece to read.
I thought you might like that one.
Whew. Yeah, for sure.
And then because of the tribalism conversation, I mean, look, my brother sent me a screenshot today of, you know, some friends of his friend in Florida, the conversation that they were having. And I swear to you, you wouldn't, if you didn't see the name of the candidates in the conversation, you would not know which one they were talking about. Hmm. Basically, on either side of the aisle, identical conversations are happening right now. Yep. This is the parallel universe that we live in because of disinformation and the fact that the news ecosystem utterly splintered. Like, we have to say that Fox News is as responsible, if not more, than Facebook for the lack of an utter... There is no unifying narrative at all. Yep. So you literally have people saying, the left are going to start a civil war if Trump wins, and then on the left you have the right are going to start a civil war if I confuse myself. But you know what I mean. They're literally using the same words, and they're just spaghetti brain. They're using the same words and inserting different nouns, and it's only getting worse. And so there's a great piece that I urge you to read in Defense One about disinformation as, you know, a national security threat, as something that we as a country have to get more resilient to, and that if you want to have a conversation about partisanship and the divide, and also why maybe the polls are so baffling, one of the reasons is, as has been rocketing around Twitter today, the total lack of trust in information, but also that, like, you know, a whole bunch of people did not think that the Hunter Biden laptop story was an October surprise. But it got 31.3 million mentions across social media and was shared in significantly higher proportion in Florida than it was in Pennsylvania.
That's totally fascinating. You also have to wonder what that number would have been had the mainstream media outlets who were all, oh, my God, her emails in 2016, done that this time. And with a planted story of extremely dubious bona fides, put it on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, right? You know, it would have been stratospheric.
But what if we're in a weird world where if they had put it on the front page, then all the QAnon people would have been like, clearly it's not true because we can't trust them. Or nobody saw it. Literally didn't see it. Like, we have to internalize the fact that there's a large portion of this country for whom, like, if it appears on the New York Times, it does, not only does it not matter, it's a negative reinforcement loop, or they never see it. Never see it.
Yeah.
I guess it is a hollowed out shell, turns out.
A little bit. Thanks for taking us there, Mollywood. Thanks for taking us there.
No problem.
But it does sort of feed, it does sort of feed nicely into my item, which is a thing from Kevin Roos in the New York Times today about Twitter and Facebook and some of the things they have been doing to make themselves less culpable in the disinformation wars this time than they did in 2016. And I encourage everybody to read this article. But, you know, they've been doing things like limiting political ad buying, right? Manipulating their algorithms so that they don't let random Joes say, oh, yes, Donald Trump is winning in Georgia. And instead, they're forcing the system to trust the Associated Press, those kinds of things. But as Roos points out, this makes them less of what they were created to do, which is create virality and create the buzz and let everybody click in and be in these groups and all this stuff. And I just think it's sort of an existential challenge for these companies now as we head into this post-election environment. Someday, please God, there will be a post-election environment, and how they keep on doing their business if they have learned their lesson. One could argue that they will not have learned their lesson.
Did you watch the Social Dilemma?
Social Network.
That Netflix. No. The Social Dilemma is the new
Netflix
documentary.
We talked about it. I didn't watch it. Yeah, no, I didn't watch
it. Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. And one of the things that it talks about is this, the algorithm and the idea of friction. Like, virality should be a negative signal on these platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should be an alarming signal, right? At best. Like, it used to be like the thing that you sought above all, and now it should be an alarming, and it should stay that way.
Right.
Because, right. Yes. I mean, it probably won't. Like, they're already sort of saying, like, yeah, this is just for now. But, I mean, and now we're in a weird, now we're in such a disinformation ecosystem that the actions that they do take, which are so many years overdue, themselves end up amplifying disinformation and extremism because the censoring is part of the story. It must be true because we've been censored.
Right. Right. The whole thing with Twitter and the New York Post and that article about Hunter Biden's laptop that miraculously got found. Yeah, that whole thing. And Twitter, look, Twitter screwed that one up, right? Because they clamped down and everybody, oh my God, we're censoring. And then it just took off.
Yep. It is a hot mess. So no matter what, even once we dig out of this thing, we're going to be digging out for a while.
Yeah. That's a good little sting.
Okay.
That's a good little sting. It's a good little sting.
It is, isn't it? It's actually delightful.
Did Daniel write that? Did our guys write that, or do we know?
I don't know. I'm going to assume yes, though. I think so. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes, they did, says Sitar and Yevez. Always yes, executive producing.
Always go to the Slack.
I'm going to take mine out because I think we should just share this one.
Okay.
And mine's a little bit about politics, and this one's so good.
You have to remind everybody what your Make Me Smile on Tuesday was.
My Make Me Smile on Tuesday was the playlist put together by plusone.org, right. oneplus.org, plus one. That was the Joy to the Polls playlist. And we played a little chunk of the Beyonce Freedom song, Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar. And it was awesome.
Yes. So Neil from California said the song Freedom off the Spotify Election Day playlist made him think of his kid's gospel choir, which performed the same song virtually, of course, because singing is a super spreading thing, earlier this year. And here's a clip from that video that he shared with us. Let's play that. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, let
me loose. Aww.
Freedom, freedom, where are you? Because I need freedom too. I pray freedom is what they're saying.
So freedom, right? Winner don't quit on himself. Pretty good, right? Pretty good.
I am like...
Pretty good.
It's possible that all the accumulated stress of the day is about to come out in hysterical sobbing right now.
I think that is what is happening.
Yeah, because also Neil told us that his son Harrison is now in college. Oh, here it comes. And voted for the first time in this election.
So voter turnout is good.
Thank God there's no video.
Yeah. Well, oh, my goodness. All right. All right. We're going to get out of here before
voter turnout is
tomorrow.
Good.
It is good. It is good.
Whew, gosh.
So there's a lot, we're a lot done with Hollowed Out Shell of a Thursday. We're out of here. We are back tomorrow. Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. Let me just very quickly click over to my little CNN browser. Yeah, nothing from the president yet.
From the president.
Throw that in there.
Yeah. Good. We got through that at least.
Yes.
Friends, we will raise a glass tomorrow to whatever, wherever we are.
Raise a glass. Yes.
To freedom.
Make Me Smart is produced and produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ethan Peretz is our beloved intern. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters, also the Make Me Smart skills that you hear on those smart devices.
Wah, wah, wah. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Donna Tam, and the executive director of On Demand, always there to answer the questions in real time on the fly, is Sitar Nieves. Erica cried too. And Eric also got my Hamilton reference there. It was disjointed, but that's what it was. I know. Totally. Right. Well, I knew you did. Right. Hamilton mind meld.
John King. John King is still at the map.
Still standing. Still standing.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.